This is the Elevate Podcast, where we have conversations to elevate your health, relationships, and soul. I'm Amanda Noga. I'm a yoga and Ayurveda practitioner, and each week I'm joined by my co-host, holistic health coach, Sarah Hopkins. So let's dive into this week's episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Elevate Pod. We're so happy to be here with you today. I have, first of all, a little bit of housekeeping. For those of you that listened to our Yoni Health episode that went up, if you listened to it in the first couple of hours of it being live, you would have been maybe a little bit confused to hear an audio track that was not our podcast. So apologies for that. And you can go back if you haven't already and listen to the real episode all about Yoni Health, which was, I think, a really good episode, one of my favorites. And after we stopped recording, I was like, kept thinking like, oh, we should have talked about that. There's just so much we could have gone into. And I'm sure today will be a similar story. We're going to talk about bloating and other kind of gut imbalances that are pretty prolific. But before we dive into our topic for today, Sarah Hopkins, what's been going on?
Well, I suppose the only really sort of pertinent update that I have is that I went to my first, because there's been like protests against the mandates and various other things been going on for months now. But the big one that has been, you know, circulating and being promoted for months was this Saturday just gone. So it's Monday now. And so it was over the weekend. And the estimates, the crowd estimates are somewhere between 50 and 250,000 people attending, which is insane.
In Perth.
In Perth.
Which is a city of what, 2 million people?
2 million.
But what was the actual theme of the protest?
So the theme of the protest, it's called a freedom rally, and it's against, its premise is pro-choice, anti-mandate sentiment. So it's against the mandates, the medical mandates that we are
talking about, vaccine or masks as well, or
I think like mainly tests, vaccine. What? No, mainly vaccine. So it's predominantly just against the vaccine mandates. So they have technology that can like count crowds, and there's loads of drones footage. And so they're saying of the entire country protested, and they're saying it was in the millions. So Melbourne had 200,000 last Saturday, and this Saturday they had 500,000.
Oh,
I know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like, I just got full goosebumps.
I know. I've got full goosebumps too. Like, the drone footage of their march last week was, they said that it was larger than the marches against the Vietnam War, which happened in Melbourne. And those marches actually affected Australia's participation in that war.
Wow.
Affected change. But unfortunately, I don't feel as optimistic about it affecting change. But
people power.
Power to the people. There were so many people there, and it was so peaceful, and it was so beautiful. And
what was the demographic?
It was so diverse. It was young. There was kids there were willingly participating and understood what was happening. There was, you know, loads of teenagers. There was like old people. I mean, old, you know, that's such a generic word, but, you know, like pensioners. There was, you know, like 70 people aged 70-ish, loads of those people. And then, you know, the full cross-section, there was an Indigenous Australian, black, white. It was so diverse, and it was so, everybody was unified in solidarity. Like, everyone was being so kind to each other. There was a little bit of hostility. There was a Channel 7 reporter. Actually, I noticed that he went straight for a guy in a Slipknot t-shirt. Do you know who Slipknot is?
Yeah, like a heavy metal
death
band.
Metal, like a death metal, like the worst kind of like heavy metal. So he was in a Slipknot t-shirt. He had an Australian flag draped over his shoulders like a cape.
He looked like the perfect person for the media to portray. Poster child of the rally.
Yes, Yes. And this Channel 7 reporter was standing there and, you know, a few people were probably saying a few snide remarks to him, which I think is understandable. But apparently he said, someone else told me this, just the person that I was talking to at the rally, that he said that our behaviour as protesters was likened to being Nazis. So he likened us to Nazis, which is very disappointing from, you know, like the mainstream media, but I suppose not particularly surprising. And interestingly, you know, it was reported on, but very scantily. Like, if that was a protest for climate change, which you've never seen those numbers even out for climate change, that would be the only story for pages and pages, like below the fold from an online perspective, the first three or four pages of any, you know, old school printed publication, photos of people with banners and signs and different, you know, it would be extensive coverage because it's a very large proportion of the population out, like jamming the streets. But it was like a tiny
And Australia is not a protest culture.
No.
Unlike, you know, in Europe, it's like much more common.
Yes, exactly.
To see and experience protests, you know, all the time. In Australia, it's definitely not as big of a thing. So
I know. And in Melbourne, they're protesting against the bill, which I think I might have mentioned, the bill that gives Dan Andrews, basically Dan Andrews and the chief health officer, so the premier, basically, it's an enduring legislature that gives Dan Andrews and the whoever the chief health officer is the same pandemic powers in an ongoing capacity all the time, because the state of emergency is coming to an end and he wants to just have those powers at his disposal at any time. And I think Melbourne, you know, having been through the most oppressive sort of COVID restrictions and having been exposed to
in the world.
Exactly. I think that number, I don't know what the population of Melbourne is. Maybe it's like 4 or 5 million. No. But I think that's pretty representative of how people feel, and people are really worried about that bill being passed through and that sort of totalitarian power being, you know,
well, yeah, enacted. They've already experienced a taste of what that is, probably worse than any other place, definitely in Australia and probably in the world, well, in the Western world. So I can imagine people in Melbourne especially are very angry and they have a lot of pent-up frustration and resentment and energy.
So, yeah, but, you know, the thing is, despite how, you know, angry or frustrated people might feel, everybody is really peaceful and everybody is coming together. Like, I think I shared some of the footage with you, like everyone was singing that song, We Are Australian Together. And
oh, my God, I'd cry.
Oh, you should see it. It's so moving. And, you know, people, like there's footage of people, like especially last week I saw more of it, but I haven't really been on social media, but like a teenage girl's just crying and saying, you know, this is for my future. And, you know, veterans, like a veteran got up and spoke and he had like his whole chest was covered in medals and he was like, I fought for the freedoms of this country and now they're being taken away. And just like the most moving and beautiful contributions. And there was also, I think this was in Melbourne as well, and there was meant to be here, but it didn't happen, or we couldn't, they were overpowered, but there were sort of the anti-protesters march. So there were people that were anti all the people that were protesting. Does that make sense? It's so ridiculous. And they said that they were like anti-racist and anti, maybe anti-vaxxers or whatever. And And they were like, if you're saying that we're racist, have you had a look around the crowd? Because the crowd was so diverse. Like I said, like there was Indigenous Australians there and every other race that, you know, represents Australia's multicultural diversity was represented in the march. So for them to say that they were sort of anti-racist was just ridiculous. And there was only a small handful of them, but they actually got really violent and it got captured on film. And they were attacking this sort of alternative media reporter that's been really amazing in reporting all of the protests and march and everything. They were physically violent with him. And it was just like such a stark contrast to see sort of that side of the political sphere, if you like, versus the great majority that were just entirely peaceful and united.
That sounds amazing.
It was so good. But that's all. What about you? What's happening in Bali? Anything? Have we told everyone that you've moved?
Yeah, I told everyone last week.
How interesting is that? Moved from the beach to the
river.
Another
beach.
Well, yeah, we're technically still pretty close to the beach, like 10 minutes drive, but our house is really on the river, so it's a different vibe. But what have I got to tell you? I'm doing a photo shoot tomorrow morning with an amazing photographer here and Balinese model, and it's for Karma Collab for our new jewelry collection that is coming out, well, just as soon as these photos are done. So I'm really excited about that.
It's awesome.
Yeah, so I'm kind of nervous about the shoot because I just really want it to be good. And this will be the photo shoot that updates the website. And yeah.
Sort of thought that you might be modeling, but no.
I will be in some of the photos mainly because I'm the founder of the project and I think it's important that I'm like representative in there. And I also want photos of myself wearing the bangles, even though I wear them every day, but like, you know, nice photos that I can post and share and stuff like that. But we actually have proper models to do the proper modeling. But yeah, I'll be in there as well.
Awesome. Well, I guess we should start talking about, we've managed as always to chin wag for over 10 minutes. So that's pretty standard for us. And before we get started, just a reminder that please submit we will have a listener question at the end, and we'd love them to keep on coming through. So if you've got any questions, even related to the topic of what we're going to be talking about today, we'd be happy to answer something a bit more specific. That's the idea of this listener question. So at the end of this episode, we will be answering a listener question. So yeah, stay tuned. Let's dive in. Let's talk about bloating and other digestive issues. Have you had much experience with this? I would say it's pretty universal experience for most women in my world anyway.
Yeah, I think what I experience most now is probably not related to food as much as it is related to hormones, although they're, you know, pretty hard to separate. But I do notice pretty clearly now, since having Sage, since after having a baby, I've really noticed my, like, around ovulation time being a lot more pronounced, like a lot more obvious. Like, I'll get a little bit of bloating, I'll get a little bit of cramping, and even sometimes I'll feel a little bit nauseous for a day, which is weird. I never used to have that before. But anyway, that's just to say that, yeah, my bloating tends to be more now not really related to food, but I think that's what we want to focus our conversation on today, right? Bloating in relation to food. I do remember when I was younger, like, I would eat just basically nothing and feel bloated.
Well, I would definitely want to talk about that because there's a reason for that. But, you know, I would say that the most common general digestive complaint that I see in working with women all day, every day, is bloating. Now, obviously, there are other things that can and do often go hand in hand with that, like having loose bowels, or I'd say more commonly having constipation or stools that are hard to pass. And so, you know, I mean, most people probably understand what we mean by bloating, but obviously we mean a sense of distension in the stomach, that the stomach is full of air or is
gas
or gas. And for some people, you know, the feeling is that there's an inability to, say, you know, like, use the stomach muscles or hold the stomach in or anything like that. That's a pretty sort of common feeling, or just like a lot of people will say, I feel like I look like I'm 6 months pregnant or whatever it might be. And it is just so common. And, you know, I don't experience bloating, I don't think, you know, maybe very, very rarely. But when I was younger, it was honestly constant. Like in my 20s and probably even in my 30s, I was suffering, definitely. In hindsight, I can see that I was suffering with it. Well, actually, I'm pretty sure I might have even had it loosely diagnosed by someone, irritable bowel syndrome. So,
things like IBS and SIBO are becoming so, so common.
Well, they're the same thing.
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting because it's like maybe part of it is we're just becoming more educated and aware on like these particular dysfunctions and imbalances, and people are more likely to receive a diagnosis, whereas in the past people probably just suffered through.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I remember the same. In my 20s I would eat like an apple and be bloated and I didn't understand why. But like
I mean, there's many reasons for that.
Hello, it's Sarah here, and I'm just briefly interrupting this episode to tell you a little bit more about what I offer. So I've worked with literally hundreds and hundreds of women, helping them transform their health, hormones, fertility, and more. And I absolutely love working one-on-one with women because we're all uniquely different. So if you're interested in learning more about coaching with me, or if you're ready to book an initial consultation, you'll find the link in the show notes. I look forward to hearing from you.
So if we just want to break down like IBS, so irritable bowel syndrome, which is usually bloating, constipation and diarrhea in, you know, varying degrees and alternations, which is actually now, I mean, when I was a teenager and I was experiencing these issues, it wasn't even like a thing that they had given a name to. So you're right. I think, you know, it's definitely become a much more accessible diagnosis. But typically speaking, IBS, which, you know, typically manifests as bloating, is caused by SIBO, which you already alluded to, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So that's where bacteria that really shouldn't be in our small intestine, that should be really in our large intestine, have come up into our small intestine and have proliferated there. And so what happens is then that bacteria will also feed on the food that is coming down into the small intestine, and that bacteria creates a lot of gas like methane, and then that creates the sensation of bloating, and it creates, you know, burping, sometimes farting, loose bowels, constipation, all of those things. And, you know, that is also related to dysfunction higher up the digestive tract, where you've got potentially your stomach not producing enough acid to break that food down, which also, you know, makes that proliferation of that bacteria in the small intestine even worse. And I definitely want to expand on that, because there's a reason that a lot of people are not producing enough digestive enzymes to break their food down. So, yeah, it's sort of complicated and sort of detailed. And as an example, an apple, like you said, you were bloated from an apple. An apple is a food that has FODMAPs in it. Probably everyone's heard of FODMAPs. It's an acronym: fermented oleosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols is what it stands for. And
that's impressive.
Well, that is like locked into the back of my memory from talking about it, because so many of my clients have it. So many of my clients have SIBO. So an apple is, not all apples, but a lot of apples, actually maybe all of them, have fructose in them or another FODMAP in them. And so those are the, I guess, carbohydrates, you could say, that encourage that growth of the bacteria in your small intestine, and then create all of that imbalance all the way through. So that's why when you ate an apple, you felt bloated. And I would say, you know, like I will see girls come to me and they're like, they come in and on paper, the way that they're eating is like, in inverted commas, so healthy. Like they're eating loads of fruits and vegetables. They're eating avocado on toast.
That was me.
And they're eating like, you know, all the cruciferous vegetables, and they're eating
kale. Bring on the kale.
Yes. And they're just eating all of these FODMAPs And they're not eating enough protein, and they're not eating regularly enough, and they're stressed out and all of those things, and they are a legit mess.
They're not eating. Well, let me bring it through the Ayurvedic lens for a second, just to kind of, in a way, simplify what you are explaining, but it's essentially the same. So if we think of bloating as being excess vata in the system, vata being air and space, so that's what we experience in, like you said, the small intestine, the large intestine, and I guess like the overall belly area, too much vata, too much gas, right? And then that leads to all the things that you mentioned, like farting, burping, constipation, being like, again, too much air, too much dryness. But what that, if we like trace it back a little bit higher, where that kind of starts is because we've got low agni, low digestive fire going on in the stomach.
Yeah.
And that's what you were saying with the acid,
enzymes,
you know, hydrochloric acid.
Yeah,
exactly. So if we think about there being too little fire, or, you know, a flickering fire that might be like, you know, having a huge appetite at some points in the day and then no appetite in other parts of the day. Yeah, that's kind of where the problems are starting from. So like we were talking about in the fasting episode, it's really about not just what we're eating, like you said, mostly eating like salads and smoothies and kale and all the quote unquote healthy food are actually, if we look around, causing a lot of problems, but that's what we've been taught is a healthy way to eat. If we're not eating enough cooked foods or foods that are easy to digest, we're just like putting that raw apple on a low fire. It can't be digested. It can't be broken down properly. So it's like what we were talking about in the fasting episode. It's not just what we're eating, but when we're eating. And if we're eating at the wrong times of day, again, this is just such an easy tweak that everyone can do, like across the board, everyone should be doing this. It's not often that we can give like a broad brushstroke
really,
advice that applies to everyone, but this is one of them.
Yeah, 100%. You need to eat regularly. And, you know, I'll add to that, one of the biggest reasons that so many women have IBS of some description, some sort of dysbiosis, some sort of imbalance in their gut, is because they're not eating enough. And also, more specifically, especially probably in the yogi community, but also just more generally in the female community, they're not eating enough protein. So if you don't eat enough protein, and I'm talking protein from animal sources, unfortunately, your body will not produce enough acid because it produces acid relative to the protein that it receives, right? And people say, oh, well, you know, I don't want to eat protein. I'm not going to eat protein, so I don't need those acids. Well, guess what? You need those acids for everything else. And so I see a lot of women that have maybe started tinkering with or have committed long-term or short-term to a plant-based diet, and they have absolutely no digestive constitution left. And, you know, the problem with that is that you can't break down the fibers and all of the other constituents of even the plants and the proteins in the legumes or whatever that you're eating. So, you know, eating regularly and eating adequate protein is how you're going to keep the fire burning. It's a bit like the Pitta Dosha needs protein because the protein is what keeps the fire burning in the Pitta Dosha, right? That analogy, it's the same.
Fuel for the fire.
Fuel for the fire. So eat regularly and eat adequate protein, which obviously that we can't be too prescriptive about because it's different for every person. But I would say that is the biggest sort of gap between what is functional and what people are doing.
And people, I think it's quite common, especially for women, to be eating not enough because they start eating and then start to feel like, so maybe they're eating A at the wrong time or B, eating something that their body doesn't have the capacity to digest, like, you know, a big raw salad or something like that. They start eating and start to feel full or start to feel uncomfortable because, again, they can't digest it properly. And so we eat less, right?
Mm.
And then it's like perpetuating this cycle of not feeling nourished and well after we eat. And so there's like no incentive to eat again.
Totally. And, you know, also from a metabolic perspective, if the body is deprived of calories, so if you're eating a super low calorie diet, at a cellular level, the metabolic processes will slow down, and those processes are responsible for the creation of those acids, right? So again, it's like we know that when the body is stressed, digestion is not a priority. Immune function is not a priority. There's so many mm-hmm. other like extra functions, and digestion is like just not a priority when the body's stressed. Now, the body will be stressed if it's not getting adequate calories. So again, that's going to downregulate that production of healthy bile and acids that it needs to break that food down. So it's really important that, again, like I feel like we are like without even thinking about it, we're sort of talking, we're reiterating what we did talk about last episode in the fasting episode, that it is really important that we are like eating regularly and, you know, eating enough, because otherwise digestive function is just not a priority for the body.
Mm-hmm. And like you say, if there's a deficiency in the acid being produced, or we could say if there's low digestive fire, then we're also not absorbing the minerals and the nutrients from the food. And so we're left feeling, or we're not just feeling, but we actually are not as nourished. Yeah, there's like
depletion.
Depletion, that's right.
Depletion and stress on the body. And you know, like how many women have low iron, low B12, low vitamin D? Every woman, because they're not actually getting the nutrients from the food.
I just feel like we have to kind of touch on the cultural thing, the cultural hang-up we have. I don't know if this is just like my generation and older, or if it's still a big thing, but this cultural thing about it's not feminine to eat a lot.
Totally.
What is that about?
I don't think that it's stopped, because if anything, like the information being disseminated and distributed, like just observing my sister, who is Gen, she's 24, what would that be? Gen Z? I think she's Gen Z. So she was born in the 90s. I don't know. Anyway, wait. Yeah, like late 90s. Yeah. I'm pretty sure she's Gen Z. Anyway, that generation, in terms of their what they've been sold, for want of a better word, it's plant-based, like vegetarian and vegan, because we have to save this planet and we have to sacrifice for the planet. And so I know that we've spoken about this again, but it doesn't matter. These types of diets, which are basically elimination and restriction diets that mm-hmm. basically make it nearly impossible for women to actually achieve the calories that they need just for normal function, just these diets are actually creating more of these digestive imbalances. I don't think that mentality of like, you know, women should eat more, I don't think that has changed. No, definitely not. Looking at my sister, she will not, you know, eat meat. She'll eat a little bit of fish. She serves herself the smallest amount of food on her plate. It's that diminishment of the woman, isn't it? It's like she's got to mm-hmm. be small.
Yeah.
In every sense of the word.
Yeah.
And the way to keep her small. And, you know, I know this is very sort of, I don't know, we're talking big picture stuff now, but like in terms of the patriarchy and in keeping women small, like if you're malnourished, which like I said, so many of my clients are, you don't have that much agency and sort of energy and power because you're starving.
Completely. No, there's two things that's coming to mind. So if we can say that most women walking around, and most women that I work with one-on-one and see in retreats and stuff like that, are, yeah, malnourished or deficient in some key minerals, like you said, iron, big one, B12, big one, where I kind of want to say like quote unquote malnourished, because of course there's like degrees of malnourishment.
Yes.
And, you know, I feel like
privilege.
We have to kind of say here, like, obviously, there are starving children in the world. There are starving people in the world, and that's a different issue, right? Completely different issue.
Just a total side note. I hope I don't break your chain of thought. It's interesting that, you know, with probably about a quarter of what the pharmaceutical companies have spent on this therapeutic gene therapy that they've mandated, they could have basically resolved world hunger.
Completely. Well, it's no like news flash that world poverty is deliberate. Anyway,
yeah.
Side note, what I was going to say is, you know, in the context of what we're speaking about, you know, privileged women that can afford to eat who are still malnourished, like imagine what we could do if we were not malnourished and we were not exhausted as we are. You know, we've spoken about this before on the podcast, and we're going to do another episode on sleep and sleep hygiene. But, you know, most women are not rested. Not deeply rested. So imagine how powerful women could be if they were nourished and rested, like unstoppable. The world would be a completely different place. And I'm not just saying this like as a throwaway comment. I really mean it. If we were in a place of feeling so vital, strong, resilient, and like you said, we would have so much agency. We would be empowered. We would have the energy to make changes in all the ways that we know are needed, but we just do not have the capacity to do because every day is already a struggle, you know. We're like fighting these small fires. There's nothing left to like take on the big fight in a way that's really needed right now in so many different aspects of our world and our culture. And I don't think it's, you know, a coincidence that women are culturally encouraged to not rest and not eat.
Yeah, I also don't. And, you know, I do. I worry about the new messaging around plant-based diets because I've worked with a lot of women with disordered eating. I've only worked with one anorexic woman, and I also swore that I wouldn't work with any other anorexic women because I think they need deeper, they need a clinical therapist, not me. But many, many, many of the women that I have worked with that have disordered eating, and many women that I know of that have unfortunately fallen into serious eating disorders, always seem to be using a plant-based or vegetarian diet. Because like I said, it's restriction, right? It's like restricting. It's like we were talking about with fasting last week, like keto diets are the same because they're restricting an entire macronutrient that is causing stress to the body. So a vegetarian or vegan diet, and particularly vegan actually, because at least vegetarian you can get some protein from eggs and you can get some protein from dairy, but your vegan diets, you know, you're restricting an entire macronutrient, and that is like extremely damaging on so many levels. And to bring it back to digestion, it's very damaging to the digestive system.
I know a lot of women that tend to crave meat or protein specifically before and around their period, which makes a lot of sense. This is a genuine question for you. I've never asked you this before.
I hope I can answer it.
What would you say is the minimum amount that a woman could eat meat to keep the acid up where it needs to be and keep the nutrients, you know, up so that they are going into their period feeling like they can let go of that much blood and not be completely on the floor?
Honestly, I think that, you know, I mean, it's really hard to say.
Right, because everybody is different. So that's like first and foremost.
But I will say, you know, like I get my clients, I hate using these devices, especially now because I worry about how much data they're getting from us. But I do get my clients to track in MyFitnessPal, which is like a calorie tracker, usually to show them how ridiculously low their calories are. Like a lot of women are eating like 1,100 calories a day, which is like, if you go and track a basal metabolic rate calculator, you'll see, I think we might have even talked about this last time, that most women need about 1,400 calories just to
be lying down for physiological function, and a lot of them are eating below that. Looking at macronutrients, which is proteins, fats, and carbs, I usually want my clients to be eating about 100 grams of protein a day.
So if you're just eating protein like once a month,
it's nowhere near enough. It's nowhere near enough. I mean, you have to be like actively getting protein in every single day. And I mean, for me, I have to eat it. I'm eating some form of protein at every single meal. And plant-based proteins are not equal.
They don't count.
No. So like I might have collagen or gelatin for one of mine, you know, and then, you know, I might have eggs or I might have fish or whatever. I mean, I don't care, but I will, once I start to get my clients to eat more protein, you know, a lot of them will say, oh, I feel like I'm eating too much meat, you know, because we've been told, oh my gosh, we can't eat too much meat. We'll get colon cancer. We'll get all of these things, you know. But they'll also have, I mean, I had a client that I did this to her diet recently, and she's already got two kids and wasn't planning on having another one, and now she's pregnant, which she's going to
don't see Sarah if you don't want to get pregnant.
No, she was like, I'm pregnant, and I was like, hashtag sorry, not sorry. But, you know, because her body was, you know, upregulating and just functioning better again and being nourished. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, typically speaking, when women do start to eat more carbs and more protein are the two macronutrient groups that they're not eating enough of, they start feeling a lot better and things start functioning better.
Okay, so let's circle back to bloating specifically. Yes. What would you recommend, like, in the moment for someone if they are like they've eaten something at the wrong time, or they've eaten something that hasn't been able to be digested properly? Like, do you have anything in the moment that can be done to help?
I reckon that you're going to have some good recommendations for this as well. But I would say, you know, if you eat something and you feel, oh, that feels heavy, I feel like I'm going to, you know,
Christmas struggle. Is coming.
Yeah, exactly. Struggle digestively, then you can have a little nip of apple cider vinegar just with water, and that's going to give, because I guess the acids in the apple cider vinegar are going to provide some digestive support. Now, you probably want to do that very close to when you're eating. I also like, and you'll probably like this too, you probably do this as well, but I like using essential oils. So I will occasionally use, I don't get bloated, but I might just feel like, oh, I just feel a bit heavy, but it's usually a little bit after. Like if, like yesterday I had lunch at my dad's, I had a couple of glasses of wine. I just felt a bit, you know, funny with drinking alcohol and eating food together. So I had a couple of drops of the, I use the Young Living oils, peppermint and a digestive blend. And I just have that diluted in some water. Now, I think I'm fairly certain that the peppermint is fine. I think they both are. I think they're TGA or FDA approved, yeah, for consumption.
They're fine to ingest. The oils that are technically fine to ingest, though, I've been really swaying away from that more in recent years. I just feel
them.
Yeah, it's even with the digestion.
Yeah, it's very,
I would prefer to massage it onto my belly.
The belly. Yes, exactly. I was going to suggest that.
So after the fact, which is kind of like, obviously, it's like taking the morning after pills, like been a little bit late, but, you know, of course it happens that sometimes we eat something and we don't feel the best afterwards. So, yeah, I think apple cider always works charm to cut through bloating, but warm water as well with ginger especially is really, really helpful.
Yeah, definitely.
And then, yeah, like what you said, I would do the, I use the doTERRA oil, so the Digest Zen blend.
And I love that blend.
Yeah, if I felt ever like sick or, you know, anything going on stomach-wise, I would take a drop. But I just, I don't know. I feel like I'm becoming like more sensitive to it, and it just intuitively feels better for me just to massage externally, and it still works in the same way.
Totally.
But of course, like anything, prevention is better than a cure. So understanding like how and what
we need to eat to eradicate bloating is, you know, pretty important and actually not that complicated.
No.
But for me, it's all about stoking the digestive fire. So if you know that overall, okay, I have high vata, I'm a high vata constitution, or if you're not even, you know, using that language, but you know, like, okay, I always get freaking bloated no matter what I eat, what we want to do is make sure before we eat anything that our digestion is up and ready to go. So again, there's lots of things that we can do to kick things off. And maybe if we like run through a day, so starting like in the morning, because obviously that's when our digestion starts to wake up with our hormones. So having something first of all in the morning, especially if you do know that you are going to, you know, potentially have high vata or experience bloating, to do something first step in the morning, like having your warm water with ginger or with lemon is also a nice way to, like, again, fuel the fire. So putting some acid on the fire to get things going. Those are two really simple things that pretty much, again, everyone can do. And then making sure that we actually do eat in the morning. This is like
yeah, half an hour within rising, eating something, please, everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I've had to really resign myself to the fact that I have to do this, even though I really don't feel like it. But Sage wakes up and he's hungry, like, straight away. So I just make his food and I make myself eat that as well.
I always say you wouldn't leave a kid until, like, 11 a.m. to eat. You wouldn't do that to your child. God,
meltdown.
Why would you do that to yourself? Like, look at what happens to the child. The child is actually an example of metabolic health because children, yeah, they haven't been corrupted, right? Children are the gold standard of metabolic mm-hmm. health because they're so healthy and they're starving in the morning.
Totally. What do you eat for breakfast? I think everyone probably already knows that I eat porridge for breakfast every day. But breakfast is boring. Tell us something fun to eat.
I know. Well, my breakfast is a bit of a multifaceted breakfast. I sort of have two breakfasts. My first breakfast, I mean, I don't know if you'd actually call it a breakfast, but it's got lots of things in it. So it's like a hot chocolate that has like a tablespoon of cacao, at least a tablespoon of gelatin, probably half a tablespoon or sometimes even a tablespoon of honey so that I'm getting enough carbohydrates.
When you say gelatin, do you mean collagen? Is it the same word?
No, it's gelatin's the one that makes the gummies.
Oh, so your drink not turn into jelly?
No, because I'm drinking it, but it feels denser. So it feels more filling. It doesn't thicken. If I leave it, it'll thicken, but it just feels like more substantial. And what I do is I have some coconut milk and water and the cacao and the honey and the gelatin. So it's quite a decent, like, drink.
That's a meal.
It's a meal, but it's not. That's the problem, right? So it gets me through and it gives me a little lift because it's cacao. And then I do Pilates usually most morning. And it's only 20 minutes max, sometimes only 10 minutes. And then after that, I go and eat something else. And it's typically like I just made a batch of banana bread. So I had two slices of banana bread this morning. But typically it's the same as you, like oats. Then I put some collagen in the oats and then maple syrup or something like that as well. That's what I'm sort of vibing at the moment. Sometimes I might have avocado on gluten-free toast with some parmesan shredded on it just for a bit more protein because obviously there's no protein in the avocado. So they're pretty much my breakfasts. I don't usually have eggs because I actually don't do super well with eating too many eggs. So I just usually only have eggs like once a week or once a fortnight. But yes, so my breakfast is pretty big and it's got lots of carbs and it's always got protein. And, you know, that's what I think is really important. And I guess if people want to do, you know, like I do generally recommend that even if people want to exercise, that they're putting something in their belly before they exercise. And I never would recommend that before because I thought that you needed to exercise fasted to lose weight. I just don't agree. I just think that that's actually just going to create more stress and imbalance in the female body that you probably need
especially if you're dealing with a vata imbalance. If you're going to go and start moving your body, especially if it's like more of a vigorous movement, which again, just like as the code, vata is everything to do with movement and change in the body. So if you're doing a bunch of vigorous movement, that's increasing the vata even more. So, yeah, to have something grounding. Very good. Okay, my love, it's Amanda here. And instead of telling you about my yoga and Ayurveda offerings as per usual, if you want to learn about what I'm currently offering, go to yogaalchemy.com.au and you can see if there's one-on-ones available, group mentoring, teacher training, and all that stuff. What I'm really here to tell you about today is Karma Collab. So many of you are already familiar with this project that I started about 7 years ago in support of women and girls in rural India and also now here in Bali. Karma Collab is entering, as we go into this new year, its next evolution, its next phase. And part of that is a brand new jewelry collection where all of the proceeds go to providing education for girls and also providing support for mothers through pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. So it's something that I'm really excited about. And there's lots of other ways that we can join forces and really empower ourselves through the act of giving and receiving. So if you want to learn more about Karma Collab, join our mailing list, go to karmacollab.org. The link will be in the show notes, of course, and come and follow us on Instagram. So much love is poured into this project and I'm really excited to have you as part of our global network of women who support other women through real action and activism. Mwah.
I guess that what that also means, unfortunately, for depending on what you're going to eat and your time limitations, is that, you know, because it can interfere with digestion as well, right? That exercise.
Well, from the way I understand it, and this is actually going to be like a nice little segue into our listener question, but exercise is also a good way to start stoking your digestive fire. And, you know, it makes pretty obvious sense that when we're stoking the fire, we're building up an appetite. And so, yeah, then you're more hungry and you're more able to digest something bigger after you've done some movement. So they kind of go hand in hand.
Okay. Do you want to say anything else about times of day and eating, or does that sort of cover it? Because I just wanted to sort of round out with some commentary around SIBO.
Okay. Well, just to like kind of wrap up the flow of the day, I think we've said this in the past, but we want to be having our biggest meal at the peak of the day, meaning peak light, peak sunlight, so around noon. That's when our digestive fire is at its peak. I hope that makes sense. When the sun is highest in the sky, that's when our digestion is also, at full flame. So that's when we want to be having our biggest meal and, having dinner before or, you know, not much later than sunset.
Yep, that makes total sense. And I will just say, if you are experiencing constipation, loose bowels alternating and loads of bloating and distension, we've already covered all the parts about making sure you're eating lots of protein, making sure you're eating regularly and, you know, I suppose building up to eating heaps of protein, just starting slowly because obviously you don't necessarily have the digestive constitution to break it down, but the more you eat, the more you will. That's the great thing about it. But you can also tinker with FODMAPs and there's heaps of resources out there. There's an app that's amazing. I feel like the low FODMAP diet is a good tool to use for the short term, but really
you know, it's another elimination diet. It's meant to be used strategically, and I would suggest using it in conjunction with making sure that you're eating more, that you're eating regularly, that you're eating enough protein, and hopefully over time, and this is what I see with my clients, is that when it's done properly in conjunction with all the other things, that most people can then eat all of those things. Like, I was totally intolerant to all of those things, and now I can eat them all because now I'm not, you know, metabolically deranged. I don't, you know, my stomach isn't broken. I know it's a terrible word, but you know, like I can digest everything because I've got like healthy levels of stomach acid, you know.
I can think of a few women that I've worked with one-on-one in the past who have been doing FODMAPs for years on end and not really feeling any better. And what I observed in them was just massive, massive Vata imbalance. And again, like an inability to digest basically anything.
Yeah.
So I think it's important what you said, that it's supposed to be a temporary kind of rest for the body, not a long-term solution.
Correct. Okay, so
what's our listener question, Sarah?
Okay, so
we forgot to do this the other week, so I'm excited to do our first listener question.
Yes, we got a bit excited talking about all of the things. So this listener question, well, actually, it's a bit of a summary of many of the questions. This is the number one thing that so many people have reached out and asked us to talk about as an entire topic on the pod. And so the question is from a listener, her name is Jade, and it's just asking, what type of exercise do we do and what are our general recommendations for exercise, which is actually a really big topic, but we just didn't feel like it was probably enough for a pod, so we'll cover it here. So Mandy, what are your thoughts on exercise?
Yoga. So that's pretty much all I have to say. No, I mean, obviously yoga is much more than just exercise, but it also is a way of moving and exercising the body. So, yeah, just to like clarify, some people don't like using the word interchangeably with exercise. But what we're talking about here is really just movement, functional movement. And yoga, to me, is the most optimal functional movement that anyone can do every day. It's basically free. If you don't want to pay for anything, you don't need anything to do it. You can modify, you know, depending on what's going on with your body. I just think it's good for everyone. And regardless, you know, no need to even say this, but it is, again, so much more than just exercise, or it's a little bit more special than just, you know, a workout, because you're getting all of the other benefits through the breath, the mental health benefits. I'm not even going to go into it because it's infinite. And I think most people probably know how good yoga is, but we just need to do it. I think the trickiest thing with yoga is actually doing it, you know, like just making the time, making the commitment, making the effort to honor ourselves in that way and to move our bodies in that way. And you never regret it. My always answer to this question is just do yoga. Do your version of yoga. Do it as much as you can, even if that's 5 minutes a day, like just do it.
Love it. And I am going to add to that. Firstly, I'll put a link to video that I recorded last week where I actually talked about it for however long, maybe 10 minutes. I was actually talking about exercise specifically and about how for me with my clients that will often want advice around what to do exercise-wise, that really it's about step five. So, you know, is food dialed in? Is gut health dialed in? Is stress dialed in? Is metabolic health dialed in? Is sleep dialed in? Like all of those things are more important to getting the body actually receptive to the stress of exercise rather than it being like another stick to hit the body with, so to speak, because so many people are just like flogging a dead horse, literally. Like, you know, firstly, they're super malnourished, everything we've talked about today. Stress digestively, not absorbing, eating super low calorie, starving themselves of entire macronutrient groups, low in energy.
Stressed out, not rested.
All of those things. And then they're going and doing F45, like five times a week. Like, come on, that is absolute insanity. So, like, for a lot of my clients, I'll actually say just stop, nothing. If you want to do something, walk. Or in your case, do yoga. Exactly. But so I did this 10-minute rant on Instagram, and then one of my friends who's a personal trainer was like, I respectfully disagree with your video because you basically saying people should stop moving and movement is important. And I was like, oh my God, you're so right. So I've been meaning to put another post up, because what I meant by that was don't try and do any sort of exercise in inverted commas, like F45, weight training, HIIT training, you name it. But movement is different, and that's what yoga can be, and that's and walking can be that, and there's other modalities as well.
Oh, there's countless things you can do that don't put further stress on the body, you know,
like Qigong, Tai Chi,
surfing, dancing, like just move your body, like do some gardening.
Yeah.
Swim.
So, yes.
Things that normal humans do.
Yeah, exactly. So I was talking about more of those conventional forms of exercise that everybody thinks about all the time, especially as the weather's warming up, and just saying that, like, most bodies are just really not in a healthy state to be able to get benefits from them. But we need
to. And, like, have you ever seen humans moving like that in human history? In a fucking environment that is so stress-inducing. It's loud. There's metal everywhere.
It's fluorescent disgusting.
Lights. It smells bad. Like,
I know.
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry if anyone's upset about me saying that. But seriously, how can anyone feel good in that environment? I mean, you feel good because you walk out with an adrenaline hit and you get that addictive kind of positive reinforcement thing going on, like you get from Bikram yoga.
Yeah.
So, you do get a buzz. But it's not sustainable, and your actual true self and your true nervous system is not happy in that environment.
No.
Oh my gosh.
No.
I just always imagine, and I think about this with yoga as well, but I sometimes think, like, imagine if aliens came down and saw what we are doing. Like, imagine if they landed in a F45 gym and they watched all the humans doing that, and, like, we have to carry around these big bottles of, like, this water liquid and drink it so, like, persistently, and then we just go and lift this other thing, and then we go and do this, and people are yelling at it. It's like, imagine what we look like moving our bodies in these weird ways. Like, it's so funny. And again, I think about this with yoga as well, because sometimes we do look quite strange. But yeah, I think most of all, like, the top line answer for this is just do what you really love.
Yes.
You know? Like, whatever movement you love to do is going to be the best one for you, right? And I think obviously yoga is the best, but anything like in nature, anything that is helping your nervous system come into a place where you can actually receive the benefit of the movement that you're doing is what we're talking about, is what we're going to recommend.
And that also applies for exercise. Like, in the metabolic world that I sort of, you know, keep one little eye on most of the time, they talk about weight training and that all women need to do weight training, and yeah, maybe we do for bone density and for weight loss.
Yeah, but maybe you can do that in yoga.
Exactly.
You're
or Pilates, you
weight
know.
You're weight bearing your body weight. That's enough.
Yeah.
You don't need to lift any more than your body weight.
Exactly. And I'm doing Pilates, which is all like bands and balls and different things that are also resistance, you know, and I like that. You know, I don't want to go to a gym. I don't want to stand there and do deadlifts with a whole bunch of shredders around me. You know, that's just, that is never going to be my jam. So I think even with exercise, it is about finding something that you enjoy, because you know, the biggest problem that people have, as you know, Mads, is consistency. And if you like something, you're probably going to keep doing it. But if you actually hate it, not going to stick.
Yeah. So if you love going for a walk, go for a walk. That's all it needs to be. But if you hate going for a walk, do, like, put on an amazing playlist for 10 minutes and dance around your house, or, like, I mean, I probably don't need to give suggestions, but seriously, no. Do what you love. That's the most important thing. Move your body in a way that feels nourishing, that feels loving, and that's going to help you to be consistent with it, like you said.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, we probably could do a whole episode on exercise and movement, but that's enough.
That's enough. So on that note, I think that we will wrap, but I do want to just remind you again, send us your questions and we will spend, 5 to 10 minutes just riffing on our perspectives on whatever.
If you want to ask us about any of the past episodes that we've released in the last few weeks about fasting or about yoni health or here anything. About gut health. Yeah. Anything that's come up, let us know. Okay. Bye.
Thank you so much, as always, for listening to the Elevate podcast. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review so we can keep bringing these conversations to you all.